Welcome to the Shit About More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Julian Edlow of DraftKings will join us. And we will go over the conference championship games in the NFL. Maybe talk a little college basketball, a little NBA as we slowly but surely start to turn the page a little bit. Still got a little football left, and I will open the show here in a minute with my thoughts on the national title game. A good game, a painful result for me, but we are getting to that point. It is freezing here where I am in Connecticut. It is single-digit temperatures, 15 degrees, something ridiculous out. So it's cold, it's dark, it's, you know, there's no more football on. So this is, I would say, approaching the dog days of how much longer until March Madness. These are the final, you know, we get like a month of this, a month, maybe 6 weeks before it starts to get a little warmer, a little lighter. You know, conference tournaments start to come around, and then things look brighter. But Championship Sunday is one of the better days of the year, so excited to talk to Julian about that. But let's get it over with. Let's talk about Indiana winning the national championship over Miami. I talked about Miami futures on this podcast that I've had. I talked about some of them, didn't talk about all of them. I think I talked about it was 18-1, 20-1. Bet them a few different times at a few different numbers. Didn't hedge. I mean, I usually don't make this podcast about myself. Try not to. It hurts. It hurts. It's hard to talk about the game without just leading with that. It's when you bet these futures, you bet these team futures, they become, in a way, like your favorite team. They're like a favorite team you borrow for a few months, and you get emotionally attached to those bets and that team. And I'm not a Miami fan. I'm not a Miami fan today. I wasn't before these bets. But you become a Miami fan when you got, you know, futures. You become a fan of that team, and to come that close and to lose is just crushing. I didn't feel like a hedge made sense just at the prices. I didn't understand that price for the game, and watching the game, and this is what makes it so hard. I thought the line was ridiculous. I think the line, after watching the game played out, proved the line to be ridiculous. As the box score is just makes it even more painful for Miami and their fans. Congrats to Indiana, 16-0 national championship. You don't have to apologize to anyone. That is one of the great stories in the history of college football. From where they were a couple years ago, give credit. Kev O'Neill came on this podcast last summer, so summer of 2024, and gave them out to win the Big Ten, make the playoff, all these long shot bets. Saying, so Cignetti's going to bring his guys from James Madison. That team was really good, basically believing in Cignetti. That's the most say profound. That's basically the best prediction, as good a prediction as has happened on this podcast. So credit to him. Not that he called the national championship in 2 years, but he was certainly on the right track, and he was ahead of that before just about anybody. So credit to Indiana. But like I was going to say about the box score, Miami had more yards. Congratulations. Miami 6.5 yards per play, Indiana 4.4. But Indiana just made every play they needed to make. Six conversions on third down, only three for Miami. They had a few more chances, but six conversions on third down, including some got-to-have-it ones where you felt like Miami, who could just never get a lead, and that's the other thing, you know, with me in terms of the hedging, you could just never get to the point where Miami was up three and that money line was basically a toss-up or a short price on Indiana. It was just Indiana keeping them at arm's length. Every time Miami would get the ball down three, they did nothing. The punt being blocked and the punt being fielded in the first place at the five by Tony was as big a play as any, I guess, outside of the interception that sealed it, because after every leverage play went Indiana's way, all the fourth downs, all the conversions, every got-to-have-it play, there Miami is 41 yards away with a first down, with plenty of time. I didn't understand the need to take a shot deep, and that's the one thing, man, when you lose these futures and you have a loss like this, and you guys know this, for losing bets, for whether it's your favorite team loses a game and it's close, you just replay these plays in your head 100 different times and visualize it going differently, thinking, what if this happened? What if that happened? They were moving the ball pretty effortlessly up and down the field. If they just went, like, he didn't need the home run there, and you don't want the home run. Obviously, you would have taken if you could have gotten it, but with 50 seconds left, matriculate the ball, burn a little more clock, just keep taking your 8, 10, 12 yards at a time. And you're not going to run out of time. You're fine on time. And if anything, you don't want to give Indiana much time to give them a time to kick a field goal, because it would have been a one-point game, assuming, you know, you kicked the extra point. But just looking at the box score, 186 passing yards for Indiana. They had two touchdowns on offense. Just brutal. That's going to sting for a long time if you're Miami. Those teams, if they play 10 times, I don't know, is it 5-5? Is it 6-4? Is it 6-4 Miami? I don't know that Indiana's better than Miami. That's just a frustrating one. If you had Miami, it's not in any way to discredit Indiana. And you know, who cares what I think? They're 16-0. You bet them, you won. They're holding up the trophy. They're hanging the banner. And it's say all you want about box scores and yards per play. Indiana won, Miami lost. But that just makes it all the more painful to look at the box scoring and the opportunities Miami had. And I believe on the punt that Tony fielded inside the five, I believe the design there, the thought there, they had some fake drawn up based on the film, based on some of the things I've seen and people have talked to. They had a fake drawn up, and the guy they were going to throw it to, a throwback play, was wide open. They just couldn't block well enough at the line of scrimmage to get the play, you know, to run the fake. So he ends up fielding it, gives a bad field position, and the punt gets blocked for a touchdown. And Indiana is holding up the trophy. So just tough. Really, really tough. I don't know what kind of pro Mendoza will be. Played pretty well, made the plays he needed to play. And here's the thing that added just more pain to it. Fletcher, MVP, was very live. He was, I think, as good a player as was on the field on Monday night. He was very live at MVP, 10-12-1. 117 rushing yards, two touchdowns, 6.6 yards per carry. Especially if he ever got like the game-winning touchdown they would have given it to him. Maybe they would have given it to Beck. But I think Fletcher was very live to win that MVP. But all of those bets get graded with red. All losers. Just it goes to show you, though, those numbers were not correct when they were 18, 20-1, 150-1, 200-1, all of these numbers on them. A team that was that talented, that had the path to make the playoffs, as good as they were, they didn't get it done. And it's interestingly, Miami, three losses this year, all ended on Carson Beck interceptions. Threw a pick against Louisville when they were trying to rally back, threw an interception in overtime against SMU, and then ends it last night with the interception as Indiana wins the game, holds up the trophy. And boy, college football is different. 3 years in a row now, a Big Ten team has won it. There is no more SEC dominance now that everyone's being paid. It has really leveled the playing field, so we'll see if Indiana can sustain this. But it's hard to sit here and talk about who's going to be good next year because it's such a year-to-year sport. But Indiana, with just an incredible run, and they are the champions, so congrats to people who had those bets. Miami covers, but for those of us with futures, just a bitter, bitter pill to swallow. And man, it's too bad the line was as played as it was because it would have been more tempting to hedge and to make something off it. And, you know, at certain points live, that the number dipped a little bit, but again, you know, Indiana just had them at arm's length the whole time, had a 10-point lead, and to be fair, if Indiana doesn't false start, they're about to get a first down and close out the game and either win by 10 or, you know, kick off back up 10 or just run out the clock. And that last drive for Miami doesn't happen, but Miami, like I said, 6.5 yards per play to 4.4. I mean, that's a tough one. That is a tough one to swallow. Miami got three sacks. You know, punts about even, penalties. Miami had 7 for 60. Indiana 5 for 38. So Indiana's the champion, and this is about as tough a loss as I can remember, really, from a betting perspective, and just being that close with those long numbers. The hedge wasn't perfect, and to just lose it and lose it that way really, really stings. I can't sugarcoat it any more than that. It really, really stings. I wouldn't try to sugarcoat it. Very painful to wake up Tuesday morning. Trying to laugh it off, but it's tough. It really is tough. Moving on, before we get to Julian, just quick thoughts on the conference title games. I like both dogs. I lean towards both dogs. I like the Broncos more than the Rams, but I don't get this Broncos line. Both these teams played New England recently. I'll do it from a line comparison standpoint. Let's look at the Bills and the Broncos last week. Broncos are 1.5-point favorite games in Denver. Bills played New England in mid-December. Bills are favored by a point. So the Broncos and Patriots, even teams, Broncos slightly better, and that's okay, that's with Knicks. You got to adjust it for Stidham. But, I mean, how much are we adjusting it from Knicks to Stidham? Knicks is not Mahomes. He's not, you know, Allen or Lamar, and all the Josh Allen discourse the last couple days is just, boy, just need to change the channel, watch something else. He didn't play well. I'm so sick of hearing the back and forth. I don't care. He didn't play great. It's enough. Whether he's getting criticized too much, enough. It's he didn't play well. It's and the Bills are out. I have no interest in it. So I just don't understand, though, how the Broncos can be slightly better than New England, and then you lose your quarterback, you go to Stidham, and you're home, and you're getting 5.5, which that's a 2-point home field advantage. So we're saying right now with Stidham, the Patriots are 7.5 points better than the Broncos. I mean, how much are we adjusting this number for Knicks to Stidham? I think this is a massive over-adjustment. I would expect money to come in on Denver. Maybe Stidham takes the field and he's awful. Maybe, you know, New England wins another one of these games like they've been winning, where they get turnovers and they dominate on defense, and just, you know, it's a one-game sample. It doesn't mean the Broncos are definitely going to cover or anything like that. I mean, maybe this is a proper adjustment. I don't see it. I think this is an over-adjustment based on Knicks 2. And I know we haven't seen Stidham in a while, and he hasn't been great, but he's at least got what's supposed to be a good defense. You know, Peyton will coach him up, and I'm sure Peyton, who's an egomaniac to begin with, I'm sure Peyton, not that he wants his quarterback to be hurt, I'm sure he wishes he had Knicks and can you know, pretty much guarantee you want your starting quarterback with a chance to go to the Super Bowl. But there is probably part of him that would love nothing more the idea of winning with a backup quarterback and just basically saying, hey, I can win with anybody. Just like, you know, Parcells won with Hostetler. You do get some style points, some glamour points. There is a little extra satisfaction, I would think, if Peyton's even able to get to a Super Bowl with a backup. And if he ever won it with Stidham, my goodness, his ego would be it would just be, I'm sure coaches, and especially coaches like Peyton, just dream of, you know, their coaching being the star. Because when you win, well, he doesn't have a star quarterback. When you win with a star quarterback, like, yeah, Andy Reid will get the credit, Belichick will get the credit, but some of there will always be the people that say, well, you had Mahomes, you had Brady, you have, you know, Josh Allen hasn't won, but you have Allen. People, and which is a fair thing to bring up, but when you come with a backup, that does, I mean, that would, if he won a Super Bowl, I don't know if he's a Hall of Fame coach now, and two gets you in no matter what, especially winning two with two different teams, and he'd be the first guy to do that. But if he ever won with a backup quarterback, and I don't think he will, and I don't even think they're probably going to win Sunday, he certainly elevates himself to a different echelon in terms of, you know, all-time coaches, which he's won one Super Bowl. I think going into last week, he was 9-9 in the playoffs, so now he's 10-9. He's a good coach, I think probably borderline Hall of Fame coach. It's interesting. Would Peyton right now be a Hall of Fame coach? One Super Bowl, didn't make another one. I'd say it's close. I'd say it's close. It's 50-50. But if he ever got to another one, especially with a backup, you know, that might put him over the edge. But I like Denver. I just think this line's inflated. We'll see what Julian Edlow thinks. As far as Rams Seahawks, they played twice. Both games won by the home team. Rams won by two at home. Seattle could have won. Seattle threw four picks. They missed a kick at the end, which was a long kick, but they still, you know, that was the game where the punt landed inside the one. So basically a 50-50 game. And the Seahawks won the game, the classic Thursday night game, week or so before Christmas. In overtime, 38-37, but they were down 16 late. So I could only look towards taking the points. And, I mean, just you go based on the first couple games, it doesn't matter who wins. If you're getting 2.5 in either of those games, you win, because one landed on one landed on two. And you can still get some threes. The threes are getting a little more expensive, minus 115, minus 120 in that range. But I would only look towards the Rams. I just think this is a touch high. That being said, Seahawks had a bye, and they basically had a second bye against the 49ers, so they are going to be rested. The Rams had to fight for their lives on the road against Carolina, had to fight for their lives in the freezing cold in Chicago, third straight road game, so they come in maybe a little more beat up, a little, in Seattle's a little fresher. I could understand that. I could, but I would still prefer the Rams side here, just because I think these teams are close enough. Who knows if Darnold is still 100%. That was weird last week with the oblique, where it was an issue, but maybe it was an issue. We never really got to find out. I mean, he played okay, but he did not really need to do much. Only threw for like 120 passing yards, and the game was basically over before it started. So I like the Broncos. I lean towards the Rams, but it would be dogs or nothing. I mean, Rams are a good teaser leg. The problem is you're running out of stuff to tease it with. I mean, there's nothing. You start teasing totals. That's not the way to go. You know, Patriots at 5.5 is not an ideal teaser leg. I guess with a low total, could you go through 5.5 and take it, or could you take the 5.5 and go through the 7 and the 10 with Denver and get 11.5? I just, with Stidham, as much, even though I like Denver, I do think that's a high variance game though, so that's not an ideal teaser, but I guess you could tease both dogs, but we'll see what Julian Edlow thinks. But I do think this Bronco line. I just don't understand the line. I'd be curious to talk to a bookmaker of what they have the downgrade from Knicks to Stidham is, because that fascinates me. To me, it's a couple points, field goal at most. I just think this is too much. But let's see what Julian Edlow thinks. We'll talk to him. Maybe talk a little college basketball, a little NBA, but mostly conference championship games. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can get them DK Network, DraftKings, where he does a great job handicapping all these games with write-ups and videos. And he joins us now with his Julian Edlow. Julian, what's going on, man? Only a couple football games left. It starts to be that little bit of a depressing time of the year, especially here on the East Coast. It's cold. It's dark. We don't have much football to watch, but how are you? And thanks for coming on.
Yeah, man. We got like an Arctic, whatever it's called, coming in for championship weekend. It's going to be chilly, to say the least. I will look at the bright side of things and say that we have another fantastic Saturday college basketball slate, which is right up my alley, and no football games to take eyes away from it. So I'm excited about that. But yeah, college football in the books, three more NFL games, and you know, it's basketball season.
Let's get to these title games. Look, you're a Patriots guy. We got to, full disclosure, being in New England, being in Boston, I have a hard time getting to this number. Patriots laying 5.5. To me, I was talking about this in my open, just a simple line comparison of the Bills and Patriots played recently. The Bills were on the road, in New England, and the Bills were like a 1-point favorite. Bills and Broncos played recently. Broncos are a 1.5-point favorite. They're telling you the Broncos, Patriots, all right, maybe even the Broncos slightly better with Knicks. Now Broncos are home and getting 5.5 to the Patriots. Like, Knicks is not one of these quarterbacks that's worth like a touchdown. I think this line is inflated. They're daring you to take the dog. What's your take on this game?
Yeah, well, I'll start with just a PSA, a Patriots fan, because I could sense it in your voice. I could see it in your face that it disgusts you. We don't deserve this necessarily. Now, it's exciting. I've said many times, if you get to live through the Tom Brady run that I got to live through, he won his first Super Bowl when I was in eighth grade, and he left for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when I was married with a kid, well out of college. Like, you don't get those runs and get to bounce back this quickly. And somehow the Patriots have bounced back this quickly. I've said over and over again, like, after that run, you deserve to suffer for a while like the rest of the NFL. And they only did for a couple of years. And here they are again. That said, I don't see the Patriots as being this type of, like, dominant dynasty again. They just have kind of struck lightning at the right time. And you can say what you want about the schedule. The playoffs have broken well for them in terms of quarterback play that they've had to go against. Now, they have played tough defenses. The Chargers at the time were the best defense they had played. The Texans at the time were the best defense they had played. And now Denver will be, in the conversation of those top five defenses they've played. So credit for doing damage against good defenses in the playoffs. But to your original point, yeah, this is too much of a swing to the spread off Knicks. Are we and I'm not a huge Jarrett Stidham guy. Now, we are seeing his last start, which was whatever, like 3 years ago, right? Float around on Twitter. It was with the Raiders. It was against a good San Francisco 49ers defense. It was indoors in Vegas, where he had 300 something yards and a couple touchdowns. He looked capable, but we have no idea what he is now. So I'll admit that setting this number is difficult, but again, Denver's at home. Denver's got the defense that we've seen should be able to force May into some mistakes if the Chargers and Texans could do that. So how many mistakes is Stidham going to make? Is Stidham going to play a clean game? Is Sean Payton going to hide him from making mistakes? I would guess probably, and be pretty set on running the ball here. Yeah, but the Patriots have been good against the run. Just in terms of the pure swing to the spread, I don't think Denver should be going from -1.5 to +5.5 against anyone. That's a touchdown. That's a full 7 points for Bo Nix. I don't think Bo Nix is worth 7 points in theory, but here we are, one game to go to the Super Bowl. I think the Patriots, with the players that they have on the field, are clearly the better team at this stage. And I think that the if you're handicapping the Patriots through this postseason, and I was on them against the Chargers and I was on them against the Texans, I think it's almost an identical handicap for all three AFC games. That being, I think May is going to make mistakes against really good defenses. I think the Patriots defense is going to be able to force mistakes against a far inferior quarterback on the other side. But I trust Drake May to make those big plays, the Hunter Henry play against the Chargers, the booty play downfield against the Texans. I think Drake May, while they're not going to move the ball consistently, has those one or two explosive game-changing plays in him that the opposing quarterbacks haven't had so far. So that is why I think ultimately the Patriots are going to win the game, but laying 5.5 on the road is a much different animal than laying 3.5 at home. So I would be wary of the spread. I think this can absolutely be a tight game. It's just, this is the biggest unknown yet in terms of what we're going to see from Stidham, what we're going to see from Denver as a almost a new team and a new offense.
Any thoughts on either the total or props here? Any props? I know it's still early in the week, but the total is 41.5. I mean, with a backup quarterback, with the way New England has played, I look at under, but man, if you bet the Patriots under the other day against the Texans, you got to be scarred. That was a game, just statistically, that's like a 13-10 type of game. Both teams under 4 yards per play, and it somehow goes over. It's hard to go under these really low totals in the new NFL where field position's better and these guys can kick from anywhere. That being said, do you have any thoughts on either?
Yeah, I mean, and the pick six was a big swing towards that total. Turnovers deep in their own range. I mean, the Patriots weren't even scoring off all those mistakes Stroud made, other than the one that the defense carried right into the end zone for them. So I would lean with you to the under at 41.5. I don't mind. So you could, again, teasing totals is dangerous, but like you could get that to 47.5. I don't hate something like a Patriots. You could same game parlay it or tease it. It might be better same game odds, like Patriots money line under 47.5, under 48.5, that type of thing. There's no way this gets to the 50s, it feels like. So that can be a way to bypass kind of that clunky, dangerous 5.5 number if you like the Patriots in the game and still find a way to play the under angle. For player props, Denver's secondary has been a little bit more susceptible recently. I know they still have the dudes, but you know, that's going to be strength on strength. And again, May can work the ball downfield. He's going to make some mistakes in this game like he has in the first couple, but lower numbers, it looks like, on guys like, let's see, where's Booty? Booty is, you know, 37.5 yards. If they target him a couple times downfield, I don't hate that. The checkdowns against pressure, it didn't get there against the Texans, but Ramondre Stevenson had 75 receiving yards against the Chargers. I could see May checking down a little bit if Denver's getting pressure. Stevenson's receiving prop is 20.5 yards. I think those are pretty modest numbers that I would consider. I think Booty's probably the guy that they're going to take those downfield shots to. So like Booty 37.5, if you made me pick now. Again, we're early in the week, but that one jumps out to me a little bit.
You do think the Patriots win the game, I'm guessing?
I do think they win the game. I'm sticking with like literally the same handicap for the third week in a row though. So like when's it gonna bite me? And now I think if they were to advance against either of the teams in the game that we're going to talk about next, I think it will look a lot different. But I think the game script and the handicap is really the same on these AFC games, that Drake May just has those one or two big plays downfield in him that the opposing quarterbacks don't have. And when you're in these grinders, that's been the difference.
We are down to 2.5, at least at DraftKings and some other books. Well, we got to 3, which I thought 3 was too many. Mm-hmm. That's probably going to be the case here. Seahawks minus 2.5, total 47.5. I would say if you like the Rams, maybe a 3 pops back up. Maybe you can find a 3. I mean, there's no point taking 2.5 unless you have to, because getting 3 is so key. And if it moves down to 2, you know, it's not the end of the world. Both games landed, Rams won by 2 in their building. Seahawks won by 1 in their building. We're down 16 in the fourth quarter. Another game where I would only look to the dog, but I really want to get the 3, obviously. What's your take here?
Yeah, this is a tough game. You know, third time playing this year. Each team narrowly won a game. The Seahawks had that big comeback to do so, which, you know, they were dead in the water. It took a special teams return from Shahid to get him back into it, and then they figured it out. Ah, man, I feel like I should like the Rams. I want to like the Rams. Something about the spot for Seattle is just a lot cushier for me. Obviously, you get the bye, and then you stay home, and you have a stress-free win against San Francisco, and now you get the extra day prep, whereas the Rams went on the road to Carolina, on the road to Chicago, both go down to the wire, and now you got to go on the road again against a really good Seattle defense that did, even in the Rams' win, force Stafford into a lot of turnovers. So as much as I'm with you, like I feel like I want to like the Rams plus three in a game like this, I'm kind of fighting my, you know, perception that I've had throughout the whole season to look at what's happening right now and talking myself into laying 2.5 with Seattle. Now, I'm obviously conflicting myself in this game, so I haven't bet it yet. I don't feel very strong on your side right now. But the way Seattle's defense is playing and in the much cushier spot, I'm seeing a lot of things that I like about the Seattle side that are giving me problems going to the Rams. But again, like 2.5 up to 8.5, they've played two nail biters. They know each other so well. They're in the division. I don't see this game being settled by more than a possession, I don't think. So I would not argue with anybody teasing the Rams up.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you start to run out of games. It's not much to tease it with. And like you said, teasing totals is dangerous. And, you know, no books. There's no Hall of Fame game next year to, like, line posted yet to tease it with. So there's kind of running out of stuff to tease it with. Any thought? 47.5, any thought on the total or props?
I would probably lean under. You know, the Rams defense has had some issues, and we saw that in Carolina, but that was a game I thought we would see some points in Chicago, and obviously we did not. The first time these two teams played, it was not a very high-scoring game. The last matchup just kind of went off the rails late. So I would lean to the under in this game. I think, again, you're going to be more prepared the third time around. There's nerves. It's Sam Darnold with a chance to go to the Super Bowl. Is he going to make that turnover that everybody's been expecting from him since he did it in the primetime games in Minnesota when his season ended there? I thought we might see that by now. And the other thing that I forgot to mention on Darnold, you know, we have the oblique story. Everybody starts, you know, the line comes down a little bit. There's Niners money on game day. Darnold did his part, but, like, was he really forced to do much in that game? You return the opening kick, you're up right away, then you get a field goal, then you have a short touchdown drive where Darnold did throw a touchdown pass, but there wasn't much pressure. Then you're up 17-0 coasting. So, like, what if the Rams score first and they start getting the pass rush in there and Darnold's got to throw downfield and that oblique pops back up? Like, that's another wild card to consider in this game, because I thought that game wasn't even close with Seattle. Now he gets another week rest, which is huge. I still don't feel like I'm convinced that Darnold needed to even prove that he was healthy last week.
How about these hypothetical Super Bowl matchups? And unless it's Rams-Broncos, we're looking at a rematch and a recent rematch, whether it's Rams-Patriots, Seahawks-Patriots, Seahawks-Broncos. The only one that's not is LA versus Denver. The NFC is going to be favored no matter what.
Yep.
If it's Seattle and New England, I'll just put it this way. If it's the Patriots, they're either going to be getting 3 or 3.5. So Seattle -3.5 against the Patriots. Rams would be -3 against the Patriots. If the Broncos involved, it's going to be like a 9-point spread.
Yeah.
Seahawks laying 9.5. Rams laying 8.5. Do any of those sound off to you? Anything you want to get ahead of, or those sound about right?
So I think both Patriots lines sound about right. Patriots 3, 3.5-point dog. That feels right, and I think that the Patriots will most likely run into some trouble against the NFC if they do get by in Denver. I don't want it to be strictly like schedule talk, because I want to give credit to the defenses that the Patriots would have gone 3-0 against to get there in this hypothetical. But they haven't seen offense like either of these two NFC teams. They've been able to get by with Drake May's mistakes because the quarterback play has been like close to inept on the other side. And we would assume Jarrett Stidham probably doesn't have a very good game if the Patriots are playing in the Super Bowl. So those feel right. I would lean towards the NFC over the Patriots for sure. The other side is interesting because if the Broncos win this game, are those numbers going to be there? 8.5, 9, 9.5? Because now Jarrett Stidham has taken down the Patriots as an underdog to get there. Maybe he looks good doing so, and the perception changes, and those numbers start to dip a little bit. Now, that also depends on what the NFC side looks like, both in terms of how the game script plays out and if there are any injuries or health concerns coming out of that game, like all of these look-aheads and hypotheticals do. But I would say, and again, I don't know if you're betting this now, but like if you like the Broncos to make the Super Bowl, I feel like you should be betting them with those numbers, because this would probably come down to more like a touchdown if Denver proves it's good enough to win this game with Stidham.
I was thinking too, I mean, obviously if the Broncos, and it's going to be hard for them to win two games with a backup quarterback, but if they were to do it, Stidham at 20-1, the narrative would certainly be there for MVP. I mean, it's just hard to get those words out of my mouth. Jared Stidham, Super Bowl MVP. But is that enough for
Foles.
You? Exactly, the Nick Foles lure. If they're 11-1 to win it all, is it better value to take Stidham at 20-1, or they have no shot, or are you onto something?
I was just gonna say, I totally understand where your head is at. But if you like Denver, maybe just don't get greedy. And you're getting a team that was among the favorites very recently to win it all, and now there's two games left on the schedule and you can just get them at 11-1. I think if you like Denver, you just take them 11-1. The Stidham narrative could be there. It could also just be two grinders where, you know,
right,
a Patrick Surtain or a D-line is going to win it. So yeah, I think getting Denver at 11-1 at this point, if you have confidence in Denver, is just a good enough price that you can go ahead and take that. And I made the Nick Foles reference, but like Nick Foles was also a much more established quarterback at the time that he came in than Stidham. The reality is we just have no clue how this is going to look. So in theory, the idea makes sense, but the fact that you're just getting a one seed heading into championship weekend at 11-1 on its own feels good enough to me if that's something, if you have belief in the Broncos.
Yeah, and I wasn't suggesting that. I was just trying to think outside the box and think, if they won this game, you're getting a quarterback of a team in the Super Bowl.
It's 21, true.
Where he's only got to win one, but you probably don't want to, you know, outsmart yourself if you do like Denver. Maybe the 11-1 is just better, but it's going to be hard for them to win both games. I think they're live this week. Beating the NFC would be tough, but we'll obviously find out who wins it all.
I would say the winner of the Rams-Seahawks game that I'm having a very difficult time settling on a winner for. So that tells you, if you want to go ahead and bet the NFC, which I think is like minus 200 to 250, range, right?
Yeah, 230. I've been talking about that all year. Minus 130. I'm happy to have that one in my pocket.
Yeah, that's the one I looked at that a while back and was like, this is kind of shaping up to be a year to bet the NFC. Yep. Minus 130 or minus 1.5, 2.5 on look aheads, and I don't have that, and I am regretful of that, because it seems like we're at the point where that's pretty inevitable, that even if something changes over the next couple weeks where you want to come back and take points with the Patriots or Broncos in that game, you're no doubt going to have a good ticket in pocket.
Let's do some college hoops and NBA quickly before we get you out of here. College hoops, a lot of people, yeah, they're watching football all weekend. Now that football ends, they just start to check in. Any general thoughts in terms of teams that are sleepers, teams you like betting on in terms of against the spread on a regular basis? What's a quick little catch-up here for people that haven't been following college basketball as closely?
Yeah, so I don't have any futures in pockets in terms of teams to win it all, make the Final Four, or any of that. But there are some teams that I've come around on backing and fading. Without a full list in front of me, I'll tell you, last night I backed Providence on the money line and +1.5 in at Marquette. These aren't the sexiest teams. We're not going to see them in the tournament, but just the rest of the way out. Marquette's been so bad, and that wound up being a one-point game in overtime. Providence covered the 1.5 but lost. Marquette is dreadful this season, so they're a team really on the road, or if they're a home favorite, that I would look to go against. And then they've been coming undone second halves. They were up 10 against Providence. That game went to overtime, so betting against Marquette second half has looked pretty good. Teams to bet on second half, Duke. You remember Duke had the big ACC game where they went to Louisville. I think they were down like 8 or 10 at halftime. They won that game by double digits. Duke second half has been a great bet. BYU has kind of played with its food in the first halves, come on really strong in second halves. BYU second half has been a great play. Tennessee has been a team that I've been backing at home. I think they're still perfect. Maybe it's 11-0 at home, but they have not won yet on the road. Tennessee's been a team that I've been fading on the road. They go to Alabama on Saturday night. I know that. That's a spot where I'll be looking at Alabama. What are some other good ones? That's what I got off the top of my head. Florida is, after a slow start and maybe being a little overvalued off the natty and getting a whole new backcourt, their entire backcourt went to the NBA, and Aberdeen goes to Kentucky. Florida's kind of finding its footing and starting to dominate some teams. Arkansas in the SEC. I'm looking at Arkansas tonight at home, short favorite over Vandy. Vandy's been awesome, but maybe coming a little undone when it comes to like the elite of the SEC. When you got to play, they got through Bama, but then they lost to Texas. They came home and lost to Florida. Now they got to go to Arkansas. Arkansas has been really good at home. So Arkansas at home is a team I'm backing. Vandy, I think you can find some value maybe going against being overrated in the SEC when they got to go up against some really strong teams. Baylor has not beat any good teams yet. They're at home Tuesday night against Texas Tech. Texas Tech's kind of rounding into form. So there's a handful of them. You really just got to keep the schedule in mind and look at the spots, look at what games are ahead and kind of have that planned. And that's been working out pretty well in college hoops.
And Tennessee did get picked off Saturday, right? Against Kentucky, they blew the big lead at home. That was at home, right?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Okay, so I said undefeated at home. They were undefeated
that was
at home.
A terrible loss. That was before the football game started. I actually watched a little bit of that, and I was
totally let go of the rope.
Oh man, that was a bad loss.
Kentucky's kind of getting it together. Throw them in the second half mix, because they were down 20 at LSU on the road, won the game. Down 17 at Tennessee on the road, won the game. So Kentucky might have figured something out second half.
If I said to win the title, I'll give you Michigan, I'll give you Arizona, and I'll give you UConn. So you get those three teams or you have the field. Who would you pick?
I really, really like Michigan and Arizona, so that makes it tough. I like UConn as well. I don't think UConn quite has it this year. You know, you got your Houstons, your Texas Techs, your Purdue's in the mix. Put it this way, I would be pretty surprised. So Michigan and Arizona should both get one seeds. I don't know if they'll be on opposite sides of the bracket, but like I would be pretty surprised if Michigan or Arizona wasn't playing in the national title game. I feel like one of them is going to be in it, and I feel like I would want that team. So the sharp side here is almost always the field. So I feel like I'm jumping into your trap here. But I think Arizona and Michigan are real, real good. And I would probably want to have one of them if I can group them together.
So you would take one of the big three. All right, last one, NBA. Anything we should be betting? The Thunder, boy, I have a ticket on them, as you know, to break the record. It's obviously not going to happen. I can't believe their little slump. Not that I thought like anyone's a lock to ever go 74-8, but I thought they were going to put up much more of a fight and make much more of a run. They just had a really bad, couple weeks, horrible loss to the Hornets. The Spurs beat them, but are they still coming out of the West? Who comes out of the East? What's a big picture thought here on the NBA and any futures awards you might be looking at?
Yeah, I think the West is tighter. Like, there are teams that can beat OKC, and OKC showed it's beatable just even in the NBA Finals against the Pacers. So I think they'll have a tougher time in the West than they did last year. Jokic will come back. I think Denver's a really good team when fully healthy. Houston can be solid. They have so much size, and they can play defense that you got to give them respect. And then the Spurs are like the somewhat kryptonite. I know OKC finally got over the hump, but the Spurs match up well with OKC. I really like the Spurs. So I think, put it this way, I think that there's value in the Western Conference in fading the Thunder in certain ways. I don't know if it all gets there, but I think they are a little overhyped in futures markets. So that creates value on, you know, the teams that I just mentioned. I think SGA at minus 400 to be the MVP, Jokic kind of being out of the mix with the injury opens up a lot. And I think too much of that market share is just being handed to SGA. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago when you were on my podcast, DKN Daily Bets. And I said, Anthony Edwards is sitting at 200-1 on DraftKings to be the MVP. He's now like 60-1. So maybe some of the value is gone, but SGA hasn't moved. He's still minus 400. So maybe there's some other darts out there to look at. The three that I bet at the time were Cade Cunningham, 30-1. He's like 16 or so. Jaylen Brown, 40-1. He's 30. And then the Edwards one at 200-1, which has come way down. But I do think that there is some, it's a good year to throw a dart for NBA MVP. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes away from Jokic and SGA. And if it does that, I'm not sure like a Luka Doncic at 6-1 is a worthy bet as the next guy on the board. There's going to be somebody down the stretch that carries a team to a really good season. And, you know, we see that with your, you know, Pistons and Cunningham have like a 5.5 game lead in the East after they beat the Celtics on Monday night. So like there's guys out there that are definitely worthy, and SGA is just too big of a front runner right now.
Julian, you're the best, man. Good luck to your Patriots. Good luck with your bets. I meant to ask you one more thing, just quickly. I asked this of Mitch Moss the other day. Got a bunch of interactions, so I'm going to start asking this more. Your game day snacks, your go-to is what? You post a lot of food pictures. You know, you're in Mass. You got lobster rolls going. You're eating well, as we all like to. What's your game day go-to snack?
Yeah, so the seafood, the lobster rolls, the oysters, a little bit more of a summer thing, which doesn't overlap with game day unless you're getting, you know, ramped up for some regular season baseball, which I'm not. So, you know, I had some friends over for the Patriots game the other day. We did sliders, sriracha wings, and ribs. That went over pretty well, along with some apps, some desserts and whatnot. So those went over pretty well. Yeah, it's so basic, but I feel like wings are just the easiest one to say. Just wings and playoff football. That's tough to beat.
It's a great combination. That is a great two-team parlay. Wings and playoff football. And the thing,
What did Mitch say to you?
Mitch said wings. Mitch brought up nachos, too. He said you can't go wrong with pizza. Mitch said he goes, if I have a couple beers, I can knock down 30 wings. I can eat a lot of food. 30 is a lot, especially, like, I don't
think
beer fills you up. I mean, I could probably eat more without the beer. That is a lot of wings. The thing that's so great about wings, and like you bring up nachos, if you don't eat nachos within the first 2 or 3 minutes, the cheese gets cold. They're just, they go from, you know, we talk about the adjustment from like, from Bo Nix to Stidham. There is such a drop off with nachos when they start to get cold. Wings stay good, even if they're like lukewarm, cold, out of the fridge, hot. Wings are, their shelf life is so much better.
So I brought up teams to back and fade in college basketball. So I guess I'll fade some stuff here on the food.
Sure.
I'm fading nachos for many of the reasons you just said. Cool in theory, like a big tray of it. But once you get, you know, everybody eats the top, and then it's just a plate of, you know, tortilla chips sitting there.
Yes.
And they're all soggy. I don't want that. The tip on the wings, go well done or extra crispy on the wings. I don't know if that applies to everybody. You like what you like.
Oh, 100%. I mentioned that to Mitch. That's the one thing. Like, as I'll cook them, put them in the air fryer, tried baking them. I know you got to dry them, and some people reached out with, you know, use baking powder. I just can't get, like, the level of crispiness I desire sometimes.
Whenever you think they're done, just go, like, 5 or 10 more minutes. Okay. And however you cook them, finishing them or reheating them in the air fryer, always a pro move. I have a smoker on my back deck. If you're a smoker person, smoke wings and then finish them in the air fryer. Then you got the smoked flavor, but the crispiness that you're looking for.
Okay.
It's another pro play right there.
That is actionable information. Julian, where can we find you, man? Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm way better at talking about food than actually giving out bets. So maybe I should look at a new career path. On Twitter, at Julian Edlow. Articles on DraftKingsNetwork.com. Podcasts, DKN Daily Bets. Quick podcast like this one, just giving out plays that you need for that night, for the weekend. All good stuff.
All right, thanks to Julian Edlow. Rate, review, subscribe. We will be back Friday. See you then.